My name is Rena. If you're new here and I haven't met you yet, it's nice to meet you. I'm on staff with UCM here as one of the campus pastors. And man, I just got to say, like, that testimony time really encouraged me. I think today was a bit of a lower day for me. And man, it's crazy just like speaking the truth of God moving in our lives, just how much it really encourages me. So I hope it encouraged you guys too. Honestly, my favorite time. It always lifts my spirit. So thank you guys for sharing the things that God's speaking to you. I love hearing it. Right now, this month, we've been going through this series called Everyone a Mentor, Everyone a Mentee. And Pastor James last week, he talked about Paul and Timothy and used that as an example of a mentoring relationship. He gave examples of what like a healthy mentor looks like and what a good mentee looks like. And tonight I want to kind of give another example or kind of another spinoff of a mentoring relationship using the relationship between Ruth and Naomi in the Bible. But before we get into that, I want to talk to you guys about rock climbing. Funny enough, we were talking about this in our breakout group and I was like, oh man, I'm actually starting off my talk with rock climbing. So that's fun. This past year, I've grown a huge fondness for the sport. And I started just over a year ago. And I got to tell you, when I started, like, I was super not good in the slightest. Yeah, rock climbing buddies. Yeah, Megan and I even entered like this newbie competition and she slayed. She was so good. Man, but when I started out, I got to tell you guys, like, I hid from everybody. I couldn't even climb like the basic baby climbs that like you see like 12-year-old kids just like fly up. I was so scared. Like, I couldn't do anything. I had no upper body strength. And I remember telling my friends that I started climbing and they kind of laughed and were like, man, I don't think I've ever seen you climb anything in your life. And it's true. I was bad. So anyways, I felt really insecure about it, but it was kind of fun. So I made a plan. I would go climbing super early in the morning when nobody was around at like 6 or 7. And I would go into a room where there was like nobody climbing at all. So I would climb, fall, keep falling, try to climb, keep falling. And so without any climbers near me, I could never figure out what I was doing. And one of the biggest tips I got from someone really early on when I started was to, one, climb with someone more experienced than me, which I was not doing. And two, copy what they do, or in climbing terms, soak up their beta, which basically just means follow in their footsteps, try to figure out exactly what they're doing and mimic that and do it yourself. And the moment I started actually getting out of my comfort zone and climbing with other people, I just began to progress so much quicker. Like, I wasn't, you know, climbing super hard stuff, but I began to actually mimic what people were doing and it became a lot easier for me. And I would go climbing with people who would kind of breeze through the things that I was trying to climb. And I just began to ask questions and watch people and mimic what they did. And man, it's so much easier. That advice was so good. I had to be teachable to get better and I had to climb with other people. And I would say I even had mentors in climbing, to help me on my journey. And I think the same principle can kind of apply for our walks with God. And, you know, I'm not saying that we have to like progress in like our levels in our relationship with God. That's not what I'm saying at all, but we are all communally trying to walk more in step with His Spirit. Every single day. And I think the best way we can do that besides spending time with Him is, number one, walk with someone more spiritually mature than us. And two, watch what they do, mimic them, follow in their footsteps, much like my climbing journey. Be in relationship with people that you can learn from spiritually. Just like, don't climb alone. Don't walk alone. Don't go through your spiritual life alone. And so, like I said, we're going to go through the book of Ruth and Naomi, and I just want to talk about this importance of mentorship and really how it's impacted me and how we see it woven through the Bible and how God uses that. And so we're going to go through like the whole book of Ruth, and I'm not going to read it all for you because that would take forever, but we're going to kind of jump around because I think we need to get the whole picture of Ruth in order to properly dissect the points that I want to get across. So the story of Ruth is told in kind of four scenes. So there's four chapters and each chapter kind of has this thesis statement, like opening sentence, that kind of gives us a closer look into what the whole book's about. The last chapter kind of has one at the end. So it kind of goes from the character Noemi feeling emptiness, and then it shows her awakening hope, and then it progresses towards fulfillment. And the end of the chapter, or the end of the book, is all about this wonderful birth of a son who becomes an heir. And traditionally the story, if you've heard it preached before, you might have heard it talked about as like a love story. But I think this book has so much more to offer than just that, although it is a story about love. I think this story also shows how God loved Israel and how God works in the mundane ways of life in ordinary relationships. And I also think it talks about mentorship. So at the very beginning of the story, we're introduced to a woman named Naomi, who was married, had two sons, and both her sons were married to these women from this country called Moab, where they were all living at the time. Those two daughter-in-laws of hers were named Ruth and Orpah. And unfortunately, during that time, at the beginning of the story, there was a huge famine in the land that they were living. And on top of that, Naomi's husband and her sons had passed away. And in those days, when a woman's husband dies, the sons would come alongside and support her and kind of protect her. But now Naomi was left without a husband, without her sons, and was in a really tough position. And there really wasn't much a widow could do in those days. And she was left with pretty much no support. And so Naomi, guys, I'm sorry. I keep saying Noemi. If you guys know a girl named Noemi in our community, I've been trying to train my brain to say Naomi this whole time, but it's been hard. But so Naomi, yeah, we miss Noemi. It's just Spanish for Naomi. So when I say it, that's what I mean. But So Naomi had heard that back in her hometown that God had provided food for her people back in Judah. And so she had decided that her and her daughter-in-laws would pack up and actually go back to where she was from in Bethlehem, Judah. But, you know, as they headed on their journey, Naomi pleaded with her daughter-in-laws to actually head back to Moab and not join her on the journey. And she gave them pretty good reasons to not go with her. But one of those reasons was that she could not provide them any more sons to marry. And it would actually be really hard for them as Moabite women to find husbands in Judah, because a lot of people there didn't like Moabites. And so her reasonings were really sound. So Orpah actually left, was really sad, but Ruth would not leave. She was really stubborn, and she kept trying to push her to leave because she knew that she would have no future with her if she came with her. But this is where I want to narrow in on, and I'm going to read the verse, chapter 1, verse 16 and 17. And this is kind of where I want to get my first point from. So this is where Ruth says to Naomi, "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, even if death separates you and me." And then finally, she gave in and both of them went on their journey to Judah. And so my first point here, talking about mentorship, is that mentorship takes submission. And probably instantly when I say that word, some of you guys might have cringed. We don't necessarily like the sound of the word submission sometimes in our culture, and I think it makes us uncomfortable. But if you think of this word, you could also call it, you know, it takes following somebody, listening to, getting instruction from, etc. I just think it's a really key component of intentional mentorship. And essentially just the action of following someone, gleaning from them, listening to their voice in our lives, and allowing them to lead us. And I think that we need to be leadable people in order for our mentorship to be intentional. And Ruth was a Moabite, as I said earlier, which meant that she was not a follower of the God of Israel. And in these verses that I just read for you, she is saying to Naomi, like, I know I don't fully know your God. Like, I don't know him at all. I know you, but I want your God to be my God. She's saying, like, I see your character. I see the way you live your life. I've known you for a long time. I know the God that you serve, and I want to follow in your footsteps. And there's something about your God and the way you know him that I want. There was something in her and something in Naomi that she wanted. And so she told her that she was going to follow her wherever she went, because there was something about her that she gravitated towards. And what that could look like for us is actually finding a mentor that we're willing to follow and be led by. Probably, I know James said this last week too, but probably someone we admire their walk in Christ, and getting to a place where we're okay saying, I know I'm not a mature Christian, but I want to grow and I want to know God the way that you know him. Finding someone that you admire and look up to, like climb with people who are more experienced than you. Find somebody that you're willing to follow and take advice from and follow them. And how this has kind of played out in my life, I have been so fortunate and so lucky that a lot of times in my life since college and even into this job, I have been assigned a mentor, which is kind of unusual, but such a blessing. And I had to make the choice whether or not I wanted to submit and follow her or not. Like, I could get as much out of my time with her as I wanted. I've really had to decide if that I wanted to be led by her. And I had to be teachable. I had to open up my life, my flaws, my weaknesses. I had to allow her to pour into me and for her to give me spiritual direction and actually have a foothold in my life. And in return doing that, I think I actually became like her in a lot of the things that she valued, or her prayer life, or the way that she read her Bible. Like, I learned so much from her, and it was because I was willing to soak that in, and I was willing to be led by her. And I think become more like Christ as a result. And so in order to have, I think, an intentional mentorship relationship, we really have to be willing to be led and find somebody that we're willing to submit to in that way. And then once we hop back into the story, so Ruth and Naomi, they're heading back to Judah. And once the two of them get to Bethlehem, people actually started to begin to recognize Naomi. And I mean, she's probably been gone for a long time. So they started asking questions like, is this Naomi? And Naomi would have been in a time of grieving. So she probably looked super different. Like, when you're grieving, you physically showed it in the way that you dressed and the way you looked. So she wasn't doing so hot. And she ended up responding to them when they were asking if it was her. She just said, like, don't call me Naomi. Like, don't call me Naomi. That's not my name anymore. Actually, call me Mara, because I'm super bitter and God has turned his face away from me. I was full and then the Lord made me empty. Like, why call me Naomi? No. The Lord has afflicted me. Don't even call me Naomi. I'm bitter. And like, what a way to, like, you know, reconnect with friends you haven't seen in a while. Like, I just imagine going back to like my hometown, Victoria, and seeing friends I haven't seen in a long time and just like, is that Rena? Like, no, don't call me that. Like, I'm super bitter. Call me something else. Like, super weird. But essentially, Naomi was just really feeling like she was grieving, and she was sad, and she felt like God had turned his back on her. And so that leads me to my second point, where mentorship is not about perfection. Here we really see Naomi's deep bitterness and sorrow. So much so that she actually asked people to call her a different name. And Naomi believed that God brought so much misfortune upon her. And I think sometimes we get this idea that someone who is a leader in someone's life, that they have it all together, which is like such a big misconception. And I think sometimes we also think that people who are mentors should never doubt or question God, or always be super faithful. And we can't mentor someone unless we have it all together or we know all the answers. And I loved what Ashley said earlier of like, you don't have to be perfect to share about Jesus. And I love that. And then even Rylan saying like, a perfect being, love this imperfect being. I think this fits so well with this point of like, we're imperfect people, but we know a perfect God. And mentorship is not about being perfect at all. And we can see that Naomi wasn't perfect. She wasn't the perfect person for Ruth to submit to, but Ruth signed up to follow her anyways. She wanted to know her for who she was, even though she wasn't a superstar mentor, but she knew that she could learn something from her anyways. And an example of a mentor, the same one that I talked about earlier, she was only in my life for 2 years. And at the end of the second year, she was actually planning on moving to Thailand with her whole family. And which is very stressful when you have a couple kids, you're uprooting your entire life, moving to a new country to be a missionary. And her family had to raise upwards of like $100,000 for their family before they could leave. And they had like 6 months to raise it. And I just remember her coming into work and to the office every single day and just was like visibly super stressed and like anxious. And you could see it on her face. She shook, like she couldn't sleep. Like you could visibly see the distress on her and just how fearful she was. And oh man, like she was not perfect, but I looked up to her so much. And I just appreciated that she followed God through the fear. And she actually asked us to pray for her. She was raw and authentic and was like, hey, like watch me as I follow Christ and my brokenness and my humanness. And just was so authentically imperfect. And yet I could learn so much from her not being a perfect person. Because being a mentor isn't about being perfect, but it's about authentic relationships. It's grow with me as I grow. It's letting someone come alongside you and do life with you in the mess and the joys. So you not only want to find yourself a mentor that you admire their walk, but someone who loves the Lord. They don't have to be perfect, but just someone that you know you can learn something from and maybe has been around the block a few more times than you. Because it really is not about perfection. And we see that in Naomi. So Naomi and Ruth are back in Judah. And in chapter 2, Ruth is about to meet a man. And this is where the love story begins. This man is named Boaz that she's about to meet. And this man was a relative to Naomi's late husband. And so back in those times, the status of a widow, which both Naomi and Ruth were, was actually like super vulnerable. To not have a husband or a son or a man to protect you, you were really, really vulnerable. Husbands were the owner of all the land. They were protectors of their family. And so, yeah, this made Ruth super vulnerable to be left alone, like looking for food. And so in chapter 2, we see Ruth actually be sent out to go look for food. And Naomi tells her to go find a field where she can find favor and just like begin to take food from wherever you can find it, which would have been kind of scary. But with her luck, she ended up harvesting in a field that belonged to Boaz, who was a man of great character, well spoken of, and he was so kind to her and gave her food to even bring back to her mother-in-law. And Naomi was super thrilled to hear that Ruth was actually in Boaz's field because he was technically one of their family's guardian redeemers. And this word, like guardian redeemer, basically meant that if you were a guardian redeemer of your family, it means that you would be the family's guardian. So if somebody dies in your family, it would be this redeemer's person's responsibility and obligation to protect the family by buying the land of the person who died and taking care of their wife. So marrying their wife. And so naturally, Naomi, with no husband or sons, was super thrilled that Boaz found favor in Ruth. Like, yes, our family redeemer, this is going to be so good. Boaz was a man of good character. Like, yes, Ruth, awesome. Okay, keep going to his field, find favor in him. So she actually one night decided to tell Ruth, like, okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go find Boaz where he's sleeping on the threshing floor, and you're going to dress up because you've been in your mourning clothes. So, you know, you've been grieving, take off your old rags, like make it noticeable that you're single and ready to mingle, like make it clear that you're available. Like we want him to be our redeemer. And so, Naomi told her, go to where he's sleeping, lay down at his feet, be really quiet. Don't say anything until he wakes up. And yeah, that would have been really scary for her to do. But again, we see Ruth following and learning from Naomi. Ruth told her that she would do whatever she said, even though it might have been really, really terrifying. And so Ruth did. She went to Boaz and laid at his feet and waited for him to come back. And when he was startled, Ruth was there and was just straight up like, Boaz, like, we need protection. Will you redeem us? Pretty interesting marriage proposal, if I do say so myself. But she was really bold and Boaz was pretty impressed with that proposal. So it seemed to work. And Boaz was thrilled and actually praised her and said, man, you're a woman of great character. I would love to be your guardian redeemer. Like, I would love to take you as my wife. But there was a little bit of a problem because there was a man who was supposed to actually be first in line to marry her. That was actually a closer relative that would have been a closer family redeemer for her. So Boaz said, you know, if he won't marry you, if he won't redeem you, then I will. And Ruth stayed till morning, snuck out quietly. And Boaz gave her more food. And Naomi was super pleased when she got home and they anxiously waited to see what would happen. The next morning, Boaz went to this redeemer who was supposed to have the privilege of marrying Ruth. And he ended up declining because our assumption is that it was likely because she was a Moabite woman and they don't like Moabite women. And so Boaz announced to everybody, the elders, that he would be marrying and redeeming Ruth. And he would be the protector of Ruth and Naomi. He bought the land of her late husband and it's great. There's this big love story. It's awesome. They have a redeemer. But where I really want to camp and why I wanted us to walk through that whole story is at the very end of Ruth, there's this little genealogy. And I think we typically quickly skim over genealogies, if not just like totally skip them altogether. But this genealogy really ties a bow on this whole story. At the very end of Ruth, Ruth ends up conceiving a son and ends up giving it over to Naomi. And the son they ended up naming Obed. And at the very end of this book, we see that Obed was in the genealogy, in the bloodline of David. And this shows us that Ruth's son was actually in the bloodline of Christ. So Ruth ended up being a part of this huge story. And her life, her story, it sounds super ordinary and mundane, but her son ended up being in the bloodline of Christ. And so that leads me to my last and final point here, that mentorship is purposeful. We really need to get to the end of the story here to see the full picture. Ruth was so faithful to Naomi and took her God on as her own, learned and listened to her. And we come to the end of this story and we see that God works in the mundane everyday life. And Ruth's child, like so special, she ended up being part of this huge story, which is so crazy because she was such an ordinary person. But we never know how our lives will play out in God's big picture. You might not know what a mentoring relationship will lead to, even if you just think it's an insignificant relationship. You might even be a mentor in someone's life and not even know it. You may have impacted people to be the person they are today and not even know it. And I'm sure right now you guys can think of people in your life who have drastically impacted you and the bigger story of your life and have really helped shape you to be the person you are today. And I think the crazy thing about this story is that if you read this story, God is barely mentioned in it. And it just seems so like such a basic like story of these people. But I think it really shows that importance of the fact that God moves through the ordinary, the imperfect, and he makes it so purposeful in all our relationships in our life. But how much more purposeful can a purposeful relationship of mentorship be? And to kind of conclude, you know, we've been talking about mentorship takes all shapes and forms. From the intentional invitational mentorship to passive unaware influences in our life. But however you've experienced mentorship in your life, I really wanna encourage you that we will grow when we decide to follow somebody and God's plan for us. And I also wanna encourage you to start thinking about intentional mentorship if you've never had it. Some of you guys have had it and can testify that it's been really great for you. But I would really encourage you guys, if you haven't had a mentor in your life, to seek one out, to invite. I know I have one and it's such a blessing. And when you've experienced true mentorship in your life, it's a lot easier to go and mentor other people. And like James said last week, his challenge for us was, who is your Paul? Who is your Timothy? Who is your mentor and who is your mentee? And I want to ask you the same question. Who is the Ruth in your life and who is the Naomi in your life? And if you aren't at the stage in your life where you have a Ruth yet, that's okay. But our hope is that every one of you has an impactful mentorship relationship in your life that you feel like you can go out and also do that for others. And so I want to leave you with that challenge. Find a mentor that you can grow with, because mentorship is wonderful. It's purposeful. It's messy. It's imperfect. And we grow through it. So I'm just going to close this in prayer and then we'll head off into our breakout group. So Jesus, thank you so much for just the ways that you have used intentional mentorship in my life and just how much people in my life have really shaped me to be who I am. And I just pray that as we start to think about what mentorship could look like in our lives, I just pray that you would draw people or faces into people's minds right now that they can invite into that intentional mentorship relationship with. I just pray that all of us would find people that we can grow with, especially during this season, Lord. We love you. Be with us tonight. We pray. Amen.